uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! You know what? There are days when, before showtime, you just want to crawl under the table and hide. This kind of feels like one of those, and not because yet another badass thunderstorm is rolling through here. Maybe it's gone by now. Power flickered. Interweb tubes went down for a few minutes. They came back up. I've got super glue on my fingers, crossing them together, I guess, in perpetuity now. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, your home for conversation radio on the interweb tubes. Of course, The Horn is available for listening live or to the rerun stream at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. It's also available at places like Stitcher Internet Radio, and iTunes Radio, and TuneIn Radio, and Tuner Internet Radio. Neat, huh? One of these days, we still maintain the ambition of being on the Progressive Voices app. I use it just about every day to keep track of stuff. When I was driving late at night, it was just a very dark night, down a two-lane road that I couldn't see either side of, headed to Selma. That Progressive Voices app came in really handy because I did something I was rarely able to do. I was able to listen to Malloy in the car. It's nice. No, not because of the thunder, and man, the wind was fun. That's not what has me under the table. This is Thorn in the Side Thursday on The Horn. Podcasting available at whiterosesociety.org with the newly fixed feed. And podcasting available at iTunes as well. No charge for any of them, ever. The Horn is funded and maintained by you. By you who can give, whether it be $5, $10. You know, we talk about a thrifty $250 of 250 people giving $10 a month. And not going for that whole $50 million I want a Gulfstream 5 to fly with my illegal Viagra prescription down to the Dominican Republic to probably shouldn't even be mentioned on the Internet. That's not what we're after. We're not after that kind of Limbaugh money. We're just trying to keep this thing going. If you want to help, the button is at headonradionetwork.com. It's PayPal. It's real easy to see. It's really bright and bold and gold or yellow or something. Right. So if you can help, please do. We're just trying to get after, and, you know, things are what they are. We had magnificent help the other night from Sal. And from those of you who met his challenge, thank you very kindly. Got some bills paid. But it has been, no kidding, a brutal, brutal month. And this is not why I wanted to crawl under the table either. But it's been a hell of a month. And I would just as soon not have another July like this and not have August be like July. And so I'd say at this point in time, we're still looking to pay about, and we're not even talking about meeting thresholds or anything anymore. We're just talking about getting the bills paid. Looking to pay something on the order of $800 worth of bills that'll get us to August. That's where we stand. That's 80 folks at 10 bucks a piece. That's not so terrible. That's not unapproachable. It's not unachievable. Probably not tonight. But thank you for all the help. that you give in keeping this all going. Thank you. This, you can also contribute by snail mail. The snail mail address, which happens to be 1038 The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, which stands for Personal Mailbox, 318 Beckley, BECKLEYWV, 25801. The snail mail address does the same thing. It helps pay bills. And you're as free to use that as you are to use the PayPal button. I heard from Boss Man Wayne today, and he said he had we had received help at the mailbox, too. So he was paying bills. I've been paying bills. We're just trying to get out of July with our with the horn intact. So thank you for all that you do to keep everything going. If you cannot tell, the fundraising business is very uncomfortable for me to talk about. It would be so nice just to get on the air and go and do the show. Unless it's today, Thorn in the Side Thursday. Because, I mean, there's some stuff out there that I got to, that, you know, I've talked about it before. There's just times when you're standing there and you're looking at the swamp and you're here and the swamp's there and you know you got to go into the swamp and you don't want to go into the swamp. And, hey, it's kind of, this Thursday's kind of swampy. But we'll get into our waders and just hope that the gators are somewhere else and get moving. We reserve Thorn in the Side Thursday, of course, for that, those things that are especially annoying, obnoxious, hateful. In other words, things that Republicans do. And we'll go there. Be patient with me. Oh, a program note. God, am I trying to avoid this or what? A program note. Next week we will be on the road. But unlike earlier, we think we've got a situation worked out, or a scenario worked out, or a fix, or a firing solution, or whatever it is, whereby we can broadcast live from the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Campaign Headquarters on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., and that way I won't be gone all week, because the gone part is just, after the month we've had, is simply unbearable. So there's that. Just tune in as usual. Agnes will be here at the mix desk, routing your phone calls to me. If it doesn't work out that way, well, it looks like a filibobster. But I have no reason to think that it won't work out. I think it will. Oh, thank you very kindly. A kind contribution just rolled in. We now need about 760 or 76 thrifty 250 contributors. Thank you kindly. And sometimes I use names, sometimes I don't use names. Tell me if it's okay to use your name when contributions roll in. Because I like to let folks know who's helping. And that is the beauty of the process. Because nobody has to pay for the podcast, nobody has to pay for the live stream, nobody has to pay for access, nobody has to pay to get into the chat room, all of which are completely at odds with all forms of Republican business models, then the horn is truly organically maintained. You maintain it because you find value in it. And when you contribute, you are contributing for the benefit of those who cannot, because those there are many who cannot. And I understand the circumstances and sympathize with them, because I've been there. We've been there. All of us at one point in time or another have probably been there. But it is a group effort for group good. And that's inspiring. Now, I did mention that I'm going to be in D.C. next week. And I'm going to be there trying to get more co-sponsors for the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Act. It's H.R. 5959. It has been heroically co-sponsored The process started with Representative Dennis Kucinich, was quickly joined by Representative Louise Slaughter and a group of other members of the House, people like John Conyers, people like Representative Judy Chu, people like Representative John Yarmuth. Rather profound who's who's list of progressives in the House of Representatives have gotten on board. Representative Maurice Hinchey. And I was proud to see today that we got two more co-sponsors. One of them was especially gratifying because, well, they're both gratifying because they're both good progressive people. And in fact, we had discussed last week one of these individuals on the Horn Malloy Skype group chat late Friday night. I believe it was Larry who was talking about trying to bring pressure to bear on Representative Barbara Lee to make sure that, not pressure, but advocacy, awareness, to make sure that she knew the gravity of the struggle here in Appalachia for basic human rights, the right of unborn Appalachian children even to enter the world able to breathe without having that ability sold off. And I'll tell you in a minute where to, in exchange for corporate coal company profits. Representative Barbara Lee has become one of the most recent co-sponsors, one of the most recent signers of H.R. 5959, the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Act. I got that word from my friend and colleague and comrade, Bo Webb, earlier today. And it made me very happy, and I know it will probably tickle the folks in the Malloy Horn chat. We're up to 16 plus Representative Kucinich, Lottie, yeah. But I think it'll probably tickle folks in that Skype chat, and hope it tickles and inspires you as well. The other new co-sponsor that we got today was Representative Rosa DeLauro of, I believe, Connecticut. And I know that she has also been informed by you, her constituents, that you, though you be not in Appalachia, stand shoulder to shoulder with those of us who are and who face the predatory conduct and the remorseless, ruthless behavior, the rapacious conduct of mountaintop removal coal companies. A report was released today. Oh, wow, you're following it on your Android, Lottie? You want to share how people can do that? Because they might find that handy. No, the Repiglicans had themselves a House Environment Committee meeting today to talk about the Obama war on coal, which is, of course, a humongous lie. Yeah, and we're waiting for the Massachusetts delegation to sign on to H.R. 5959 too, Lottie, and I'm going to be getting to that. No, repig-licking, the God-fearing, upstanding, America-loving Christian. Oh, the GOP had themselves a hearing about that there Obama war on coal. And it was about as intelligent as I just made it sound. Concomitantly, however, the Democratic minority in the House in that committee, as led by ranking Democratic member Massachusetts Representative Edward Markey, put out a fascinating, not to mention horrifying, document. The Democratic staff of the Natural Resources Committee released the document at the direction of Representative Ed Markey. It's called Our Pain, Their Gain. And it is a statistical analysis, among other things, of where mountaintop removal coal goes. Our Pain, Their Gain. If you will go, if you want to see the report, the best thing, the best way to go about doing it is to go to ecowatch.org. Uniting the voice of the grassroots environmental movement, ecowatch.org. And look for U.S. Rep. Markey releases report on increase in coal exports. ecowatch.org/2012/Markey-coal-exports. Again, the name of the Democratic Committee report, Our Pain, Their Gain. You know, it was never something that was tolerable in the first place that mountaintop removal coal was providing electricity so that ignorant people, utterly unknowing of the misery and the agony and the tragedy that stalks these hills day in and day out. It was never pleasant to consider that mountains were being blown up, streams filled in, and literally unborn children being cheated of their ability to breathe so that clueless people could walk out of very well-lighted rooms and walk in a little bit later thinking nothing had changed. It was never pleasant to consider that mountaintop removal was supporting a wasteful culture that thinks electricity comes from a wall socket as opposed to coming from communities that have been buried under tons and tons of toxic, dust-laden, heavy metal-leaching rubble. No, that was never, it wasn't even comforting. But the information released at the direction of Representative Ed Markey today is even more uncomfortable. Of course, you knew about this because you listened to the horn. That means you're plugged in. Sorry. That means that you are informed probably better than anybody else on planet Earth about what's happening here in Appalachia. Because you know that not all of the blown-up mountains in Appalachia go into some coal-fired power plant that contributes to disease and death here in the United States. You know, as people who didn't learned today, that a significant amount of mountaintop removal coal is blasted and gouged and scraped and dragged out of the earth and put on a truck, and the truck goes to a train terminal, and the coal gets on a train, and then the coal rides the train to the coast, and it gets on a boat, and then the coal goes to places like Russia and India and China. Our Pain, Their Gain. Mountains destroyed for coal shipped overseas. The EcoWatch article has a link to the PDF file that was created by the folks at democrats.naturalresources.house.gov. It is a 38 painfully accurate, horribly detailed report. It begins one of the coal industry's favorite ads in recent years, and I'll warrant you've probably seen it, and when you saw it, because you've learned the horrors of mountaintop removal, you've probably come damn near gagging. One of the coal industry's favorite ads in recent years displays an orange power cord plugged directly into a piece of coal. The picture is accompanied by words assuring the viewer that coal is cheap, reliable, and a key to the nation's domestic energy security. The message for Americans is that coal equals electricity in the United States, and to tamper with that would be to tamper with our way of life. But the Democrats pointed out, a more truthful ad would unplug the power cord and replace it with an ocean-going freight liner bound for steel mills and power plants across Europe, South America, China, and India. The image of the ship leaving an export terminal would then dissolve into the naked remains of what used to be a majestic Appalachian mountain. They didn't say, but I'll add, the oldest mountains on the entire planet. As the camera zoomed out to show the buried remains of streams and rivers and hillsides stripped bare by mining, the announcer would tell the viewer about a dramatically changing industry that is depending more and more on exports to survive. The box on that first page says, a growing body of research shows that mountaintop removal mines not only ruin ecosystems, but cause cardiovascular disease, cancer, birth defects, and poor overall health. Not to mention cheating little unborn babies of the ability to breathe. They're part of the mountaintop removal corporate power and profit structure, you see. It's not just the coal that gets on those boats and heads for places like China. It's little unborn babies' lungs. It's granddad's heart. It's grandma's liver. It's baby brother's kidneys. And your next door neighbor's brain. That gets on the boat, too. Because they're all necessary in order for the coal predators to get the profits that they wake up every morning and fall asleep every night lusting after. Coal exports have nearly doubled since 2009 to 107 million tons last year, now accounting for almost 12% of U.S. production. Three out of every four tons that are exported come from the Appalachian region. And often this coal is produced by mountaintop removal mining, a devastating practice that has blanketed communities with soot, contaminated drinking water, and destroyed 2,000 miles of streams. Go and read the report for yourself. It's fully footnoted. It is meticulously researched. In West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Kentucky, and Virginia, 97 mountaintop removal, steep slope, and surface mines sent that strip-mined coal to prop up the steel industry and power plants and what have you of foreign countries that they then return, whose products then return to us in the form of a massive trade deficit. If Andy is listening, I'm sure he's thinking about what he wrote last night about NAFTA and GATT and SHAFTA and PAFTA. SAFTA, yeah. Since 2009, exported coal has grown in Pennsylvania, Kentucky, West Virginia, and Virginia by 91%. Of those mines, exports claimed half more than half of their production in the year 2011. Of those 97 mines, six of them exported 9 out of every 10 tons they produced. And along with those tons, as noted, went some unborn baby's ability to live, to breathe, to feel a healthy heartbeat. We are literally being killed. To fire Chinese, Russian, partial design is to bring the United States of America's economy to its knees. Unspoken in this report is something that badly needs to be spoken. Unspoken in this report is the fact that we could, as noted, at least on this program, we could eliminate every coal-fired power plant in the United States, and the blasts would still send toxic dust drifting in particulate sizes too small for the human body to be able to stop, down over communities, over homes, and yes, over cribs. Because Alpha Natural Resources, Arch Coal, and their ilk, they don't care where the money comes from as long as the check clears. Why would they care where the money comes from? They don't care what has to happen to people who live near mountaintop removal in order for them to have the coal. They don't care. Money. Money. Must have more money. Throw another baby on the barge. We got to profit. We got to prop up the share price. And even if more coal-fired power plants convert to natural gas, which is no bargain, not for the planet, not for the planet's ability to support human life, at least. We'll get to that in a minute. Even if every coal-fired power plant shuts down, all that does is provide more incentive to blow up more mountains, to put it on a boat. Because frankly, the coal companies get better coal prices from foreign buyers. An American coal company will sell wet black mud and call it coal, and overseas the demand is so high and the hunger so profound that they'll pay just about any price. So at least we know that Representative Markey knows what's being done to people in Appalachia. Now his Republican colleagues don't give a damn. We don't even bear notice. If we stack the bodies like cordwood in front of Doc Hastings' office, he would not care. Because the only thing a Republican, the only thing a GOP monster thinks about is profit and money. we do know that Representative Markey knows and that he does care. What he has not done thus far is sign on to the one, not one of, but the one bill that will end mountaintop removal, period. That's H.R. 5959, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. It's the only one. There's another bill out there that would end some, but not all. It wouldn't, for instance, end the what's happened within 2 miles of this palatial estate. It wouldn't end it. It wouldn't end a lot of what's going on across the river from me near the borders of the boundaries of a national park. It wouldn't end it. Only one. Only one bill will end it. And that's the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. The bill has already gotten further than any mountaintop removal. There's never been a bill that eliminates mountaintop removal before, so of course it's already gotten further. But it is making, for what it is making stunning progress. And it is doing so in large part because of you. It is doing so because you have fearlessly picked up the phone. You have gone to your computer keyboard and written emails. And you haven't just written one, you've written several. And you've been persistent about it. And you've not been willing to take no for an answer. And that must continue. It simply must continue. And that's part of what, and I hope you'll stay in touch with me once I'm in D.C., because that's part of what I'll be doing. During the day, I'll be working the halls of Congress, knocking on doors, begging, and begging doesn't come easily to me, begging. For people to show some mercy to one of the most beleaguered regions of the entire United States and perhaps of the world. And while I'm doing that, if you can let me know that you are working a particular member of Congress, I will make a point of finding that office, and I will go through it, and I will go through it in your name. Not I, we. Ferg will be with me. My friend, my colleague, my comrade Bo will be with me. And it becomes twice as powerful when we can go through the door and say, listen, we know you're getting calls about this. Quit beating around the bush. What are you waiting for? Because, see, just to remind you, mountaintop removal costs $3,975 human lives in West Virginia every year. It's about 11 a day. Somewhere today in West Virginia, an undertaker is doing his thing on 11 people that had to die so mountains could be destroyed and sent to places like Russia and China and India. Might as well put the bodies on the boats, too. It's a slow ride. So, please, you can learn all you need to know about the ACE Act by going to ACHEACT.org. You can take action. It is almost, if not entirely, cost-free to you, save for your energy, your passion, and your compassion to advocate on behalf of the ACE Act.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you.
Listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Right to adequate nutrition, housing, recreation, and medical services.
Well, by God, Jesus doesn't like that!
The child who is physically, mentally, or socially handicapped shall be given the special treatment, education, and care required by his particular condition. Well, we've already talked about the right-wing yammerhead in Mississippi. Them handicapped people, they don't want a hand out, they want a hand up. I ain't never met a single one of them wanted to get in a swimming pool with me. What for we got to have a socialist government giving us socialist rules saying we got to make it so as handicapped people can get in the swimming pool? And now they want to play the putt-putt golf, and they want to sit in our saunas. That's just disgusting socialism. I was about to say, do you see or do you understand? And of course you do. I don't have to ask that. That's a wasted rhetorical question. These people, as Ann Romney likes to say, are sick. They are sick. Deadly sick. How could you not agree with any one of those statements? The child, for the full and harmonious development of his personality, needs love and understanding. No, hell no! The child needs to have her hands glued to the wall. Or a shock collar put around her 13-year-old neck. That's what the child needs, not that namby-pamby, molly-coddling, UN communism. God, I just feel dirty talking about it. I do. I really, really do. Where did I go? The phone turned into a fax machine sound? I don't know. Oh, well, looks like it's time for a call to Chantel. Not suffer the little children to come unto me, but these, come on, y'all, let's go make them little children suffer stories are beginning to get under my skin. Vasty Coleman. That little boy by the name of Chiron Barnes. Down in Houston, Texas, the state with more uninsured people, and in particular more uninsured children than any other state in the union, that will reject any expansion of Medicaid. Vasty Coleman has been taken into custody. Vasty Coleman is 27 years old. She was taken into custody because she whipped her 4-year-old son, Kyron Barnes, to death last Sunday night because he wet his pants. You know, that might be covered under the UN Declaration of the Rights of the Child, but we don't want none of that sovereignty-stealing UN one-world government sickness here. Oh, hell no. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, from Tucson.
Whoa, hey, Fancy.
Hey. I got some positive. I'm struck with Hal Sparks with Happy Ending, and it's not near ending time yet, but I got some happy thoughts to share.
Oh, do.
Yeah. Driving around my neighborhood the other day, I'm seeing a little filling. There are apparently little plug-in units that people will be able to juice their electric cars from.
Beautiful. That's the beginning of critical infrastructure.
We've got them at the libraries. You can do an electric fill-up at the library, but this is the first one I've seen on private property. And I'm thinking it's probably on the kind of a strip shopping area with offices and warehouses, and how nice that is. Now I'm driving down the street, and on the I pass the Reformed Jewish congregation, and they've put like canopies, you know, drive under we call them ramadas here, but shady areas to park your cars. And they've got about two lines of them there on their parking lot. And, of course, here shade's pretty precious anyway.
Not a lot of it.
Well, yeah. On top of these, they're photovoltaics. They're sun catchers. Solar energy. And while I'm thinking, boy, this is really a good idea, hooray for the Reformed Jews, I look over to my left, and there at Incarnate Word Monastery, the same thing.
Would that be the Roman Catholics?
Yeah. So what a good idea. The religious organizations are seeing parking lots. They're providing shade, which, as I said, is, you know, boy, we fight for shady spots around here. And the shade produces electrical power. Now, isn't that something worth celebrating?
I would think so, and I would think it actually meets either particular faith's mandates to do justice in the world.
I would think so, yeah. You know, certain things we can all agree on. How nice is that? So I hope other people are seeing those things around, want to keep up with it, because...
Well, and if we're talking about happy stuff, we're actually in the plotting phases of, because we've talked about it here for quite a while. We're in the plotting phases of on a couple of different fronts. One helped along by our buddy Ivan in Florida. Another helped along by our buddy Mr. Gibson in Oregon. We are in the plotting phases, Fancy, of trying to get the horn off the stinking coal-powered grid.
How wonderful is that?
Oh, won't that be a glorious day to celebrate? I mean, I've talked about it for years, and I can't wait to send John Fox the announce script that says, no mountains, no unborn babies, no communities, no lungs, no hearts, no internal organs of any kind were harmed by the energy produced to bring you this program.
I'm seeing it around town here, little signs out, people are getting the, the water gathering units, the cisterns.
Uh-huh.
And they have signs about our water comes from the sky. And, of course, we're in Tucson, Arizona, babe. We get about 10 inches a year. And most of it this time of year in very short, violent storms. So water is a major issue, but they are harvesting. And there's several of them in the neighborhood now over at my veterinarians. They've got them out front. And I don't know. they're doing pretty well with that. So some of the houses have become independent. And, well, we got more sunshine. You know, what's the line about, you brought me more sunshine than I can use, so I think I'll just spread it around. That was one of the Bawdy singers years and years ago.
We just need to spread it a little more broadly. Yeah, because there is enough sunlight falling on Arizona to power the entire United States.
Absolutely.
In fact, there's enough sunlight falling on one little corner of Nevada, to power the United States. There's enough wind blowing around, for instance, the Patty's neck of the woods up in North Dakota to power the United States. The trick is that,
Ardmore, Oklahoma.
Yeah, the trick is our entrepreneurial driven business structure doesn't see any benefit in cheap energy. Meanwhile, of course, as Bill McKibben noted, Germany does. I mean, who wouldn't love to have an extra 3 or 4 or 5, depending on which power company is putting the screws to you, 100 extra bucks in your pocket every month? Who wouldn't love that? If it was 300 instead of 500, who wouldn't love the extra 200, Fancy?
I've got a son and family in Leipzig, you know.
True, yes.
And they're doing okay. Plus, yeah, I've talked about this before. The baby, all the prenatal was covered. The day he was born, they set up the schedule of this is when he gets his checkups, this is when he gets the shots, da-da-da. And, of course, anything that they're not comfortable with, they can go to a private doctor, but everything's been fine. My son had gallbladder, had surgery. Everything went very well, and he didn't pay a copay. Nothing. Zip. He said the only problem was they weren't too sure what to do, what to feed a vegetarian. And
you know what? When that's the worst of your problems.
Yeah. So that would have bankrupted him here.
Sure. But it would have bankrupted him for freedom. Sorry, I don't think that's very. Maybe that's very.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm tired. I guess this is what I'm getting at, Fancy. I'm tired about these vacuous discussions of freedom when the people advocate when the freedom that people advocate seems to resemble nothing so much as serfdom.
Well, it's a lot like antebellum South, where the wealthy deserved to be cared for and treated very well, and they made their money by other people working for free. It's just ridiculous. But that's where we're going to. It's an odd time. I'd rather think that the Romney forces, the LDS behind the Romney forces, truly feel that God wants a Mormon in office. And if you believe that God's going to get you there, you don't have to worry about anything else. I made a comment in the chat room.
Yeah, it's all covered under the umbrella policy, right?
I look at Romney, and all I can see is Alfred E. Newman saying, "What? Me worry?"
Yeah, even if George looked a little more like him, but no, I get the analogy.
Yeah, if you believe that God wants you there, you're going to get there, and without a whole lot of effort on your part. But boy, are they helping to screw it up themselves. And Lottie just put something in the chat room about Bain coming from South American the initial investors were Guatemalan people who were involved with death squads, and that's in the LA Times I think today. That's heavy journalism.
Yeah.
And
Well, you know, it turned out, and I remember how, well, stories like this, any mention of the man's name would make our old friend Sue just hit the ceiling. Bob Murray, who got all those miners and rescuers dead out in Utah.
Oh, yeah.
Remember Bob Murray, the Crandall Canyon disaster? Well, it turns out that he hosted a massive fundraiser for Willard Romney. And so, arguably, some little portion of that money raised was raised out of literally the blood of dead miners and from the grief of those miners' widows. And daggum, how do you not draw that line? You know, whether it's the death squads or dead miners, or I'm waiting to find out that that Willard is actually invested in mountaintop removal, and then then it really is. It's going to be personal.
Incidentally, I looked it up. I caught it this morning, and the ad that the Democratic Party's pulling, but it's certainly worth a look. There's two versions of it, and it's Romney dancing around the subject, and they have it, cuts of the dressage horse dancing.
Oh, that's beautiful. They're pulling it?
And yeah, I'll see if I can find that and throw it into the...
Why would they pull that? That's genius.
Because of Romney, yeah.
What, did it hurt his feelings?
Campaign, don't mess with my horse kind of stuff.
Oh, for heaven's sake!
Using an innocent horse to defame, but it's brilliant. It's brilliant. It's Romney not answering direct questions, and then cut to the horse dancing, and then Romney giving that little laugh, and giving another. It's Romney and his horse.
Yeah, he's such a low life sleaze. How does he not earn whatever opprobrium is heaped upon him, Fancy?
Well, it's very just. It's the tax thing's really not going to do him any good, and that's. And I'm thinking, they're thinking of why is he hiding in it? It may be that he's hiding income from the church because apparently they're required to pay 10% of it.
Yeah, plenty of that, right.
And in his offshoring, he may not have reported that income to the church. Oh, how odd is that?
You know, he might get himself excommunicated, and then what's the joy in building the spaceship, Fancy, when you've been excommunicated by the and you don't get the planet anymore?
Well, I probably have to go offline in a few minutes because it looks like the storms are rolling in, and.
Well,
lightning is not healthy to one's computer.
No, but I hope it's good rain. Fancy, you take care. It's awful good to hear from you, dear.
Yeah, Gugum. Agnes, okay?
Yeah, doing good. She's doing good.
Okay.
We're dealing with the various disasters that befell us here, but she herself is, she's magnificent in crisis and pretty darn fun to be around when it's not one.
And send me back a number where I can get with her, and we can carry on.
Okay, sounds good, Fancy. You take care.
Okay, thank you, dear. Bye-bye. Right. And bye to everybody.
Okay, bye. It's our pal Fancy calling from Arizona that might just get, who knew, rained on.
Mother's Day, May 9th, and Mom doesn't need another apron. Flowers wilt and die. Get Mom something unique.
Mom, you know how I've always told you I love you because you're so unique?
No.
Meant to. Anyway, I wanted to get you something for Mother's Day as unique as you are. That's why I called the International Raindrop Registry. I had a raindrop named after you.
You what?
That's right, Mom. For only $54.95, I named a completely unique raindrop after you. there's a certificate suitable for framing.
You dummy! Didn't I raise you better? A raindrop? What were you thinking?
But, Mom, the International Raindrop Registry has registered the name of your raindrop in the office of the Commissioner of Major League Baseball forever.
You moron! Why didn't you just buy me the Brooklyn Bridge?
Oh, Mom, they said I couldn't afford it.
That's right. For only $54.95, you can name a raindrop perfect in form, perfect in its uniqueness after your mom. And the International Raindrop Registry will register her raindrop's name in the office of the Commissioner of Major League Baseball. Call 800-620-9967.
I'm Bud Selig, and I'm not just the Commissioner of Major League Baseball. I'm a widow raindrop. That's white, or bright. I like the International Raindrop Registry so much, I bought the company. You dimwit, I'm gonna start calling you Raindrop Man!
Oh, where have you been, my blue-eyed son? Where have you been, my darling young one? I stumbled on the side of 12 misty mountains. Walked and I crawled on 6 crooked highways. Stepped in the middle of 7 sad forests. Been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of the graveyard. It's a hard, and it's a hard, and it's a hard, and it's a hard, and
begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Man, that was an old bit. I forgot that it was tied up with Mother's Day. The International Raindrop Registry. The guy that you just heard doing the announce, D-Rez, that's him doing the mom, too. Cool, huh? Marty, you're welcome. Thank you so much for ripping the Name a Star scam and Bud Selig at the same time. Ground rule double, maybe. I don't know. David in South Carolina noting, Willard is hiding all his wives and sister wives and all the dependents. That's what he's hiding. He's probably receiving income tax refunds. Heck, he's probably on food stamps. I always like to give to charity. I like to give to the poor. My favorite charity. Poor me. All right, 13 minutes after the hour, and see what's going on the phone. Hey, welcome to the program.
Is that me you're talking to, Bob?
That's you I'm talking to, Bill. What's happening?
Well, I want to thank you. We connected just as the fellow on the radio was saying something about, hello, you moron. I thought, well.
Yeah, sorry.
I loved it. I couldn't have done it better myself. I mean, it was one of those accidents that has you laughing. Sometimes things happen like that in life. You couldn't use it in a routine, you know, because it's so perfect. But seriously speaking, I just wanted to get a couple of quick ones here. I don't know if I mentioned I did a book called Made in America, which was a study of the WPA.
Yes.
Okay, and I'm working on one now called The Invisible Hand, The Rise of the Conservative Movement from the New Deal to Reagan. And this is horrifying. And, of course, the author, Tim Phillips, traced this back, the rise of this movement, right back to my most unfavorite 1930s group, of course, the Liberty
League.
Yep. DuPont family. The Boom Boom family, you know. They were involved in that. And then they got into a couple of Austrian school economics people. Hayek.
Oh, those guys are always just repugnant. And that creep from the Austrian school that they named an institute after down at the at Auburn University or somewhere near Auburn.
Well,
the von Mises Institute.
Von Mises, yeah. I came up with a hemorrhoid and I forget what I called the second guy. Mucus, I think.
Yeah, von Mucus, that sounds good. I like that, Bill.
Well, I have a sick sense of humor, you know that. Yeah, but I remember.
But if it works for you, it certainly works for us.
Well, my daughter talked to me a lot about the Austrian school, and my feeling about anything that came out of Austria after World War One was not the best. A guy I used to work with in a knitting factory when I was still in high school emigrated from Vienna, and he talked about a guy who walked around with a long coat on trying to sell hand-painted postcards. He slept in men's shelters and such. Adolf, his first name was. And he was around in the early 20s in Vienna, or late teens.
Yeah,
I'm not convinced of this. Austria, come on. They were the tottering empire. Somebody was just talking about the Habsburgs. Is that you?
That was us last night, yes.
Yeah, the remains.
That was Jim and me.
Family. Yeah, they were nothing when they attacked Serbia and got their heads handed to them.
Well, the last emperor's son, who I noted died at the age of 98, like last year, Bill, one of his more famous quotes was that no one suffered under the Nazis more than Austria. That got him a little bit of heat.
Yeah, there was a lot of folks who were, I come from a strange family. I was told that my great-grandfather was a Eastern Orthodox priest, and later on, my dad's brother, long after my dad's death, my uncle told me, is that what the old man told you? He says, Bill, he was a Roman Catholic priest in a small Austro-Hungarian a parish in a mining area of PA. A lot of coal miners from the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Carpathians, I guess, were full of them. The Carpathian Mountains. You know how those mountains are with coal?
Oh, loaded, are they?
Yeah, I guess there's some connection between the two of them, a lot. You know, the mountainous country and what's underneath it. And he married his housekeeper. With the church. I said, now I know where my weaknesses came from. You know, it's all genetics, Bob. Whether it's genetic or not. And my granddad went back after birth, you know, typical. He was born here, so as a citizen, they took him back and they went to Vienna, and he immigrated back here by himself at age 11 and became a miner in PA for about a year, and then
age 11, he would be a miner. Sorry, couldn't resist.
Yes, he sure was. Well, he told his sons that there were better ways to make a living, and he came to Cleveland and worked in the New York Central. Had a big work area, a big yards on the east side of Cleveland. In fact, when the New York Central folded, you know, with the changeover to Conrail, etc., the taxpayers spent a fortune cleaning up the brownfield that this corporation left.
Oh, no, I have no doubt. It was probably PCBs and various and sundry toxins from one place to the other.
Yeah, you know, my granddad's job, for quarter of what I heard, part of his job, and when the steam engines were still blowing, was to climb in there and clean out behind the light where the box was, the smoke box. Nice job, huh? Go clean out all that crap that accumulates. You'd associate, you know, I'm proud of my former co-worker and congressman. Because I told you that Dennis was like a 19-year-old fellow who had just lost a race for council as a young man. And he was working the hell out of it. We were all working for Dow Jones, of all places. You know, the Wall Street Journal. We worked for the damn newspaper. Different. He was a copy reader and then slot man. Before he went back and ran for council again, which takes a literate person, you know, to work that spot in a newspaper. Yeah, I had even a flunkier job.
And I did see an email the other day where I guess when this congressional term ends, Dennis is going to go and do some piece work on the private side.
Well, somebody has to.
Well, he'll be good at it. He'll be good at it.
And he's too good to be wasted, way too good to be wasted. I mean, Kaptur has a good labor reputation out of Toledo, but, you know.
Yeah, but she also takes a ton of let's go blow up the brown people money. She took.
Yes.
Yeah, what funded her campaign was an absolute raft of filthy defense contractor money, and she used it to run filthy ads against Dennis.
Yes.
And even in a primary contest, I find that unpardonable.
That's what she,
because they were both they both allegedly, I mean, we know Dennis does, but it was, you know, it was said that Marcy Kaptur enjoyed some progressive street cred, and you know what, you don't run ads like she ran if you are.
Yeah, that's the truth. It's I was downtown and sitting there with the Dixieland band in '67, and some fat guy who was a few years older than me, but not too much. Asked me to do some commercials, and I didn't know what even. For all I knew, I did a lot of off-the-wall commercial work. Anytime somebody wanted a harmonica in the background, or whether they were selling, they're trying to sell the old American idea with that harp, you know. And I did two commercials for Mr. Ailes when he was a flunky here, and he was producing a show in Cleveland, and he was a trickster for the Republican Party for. Governor Rhodes, he worked with that bunch in his youth. And one commercial was a American Eagle exploding in fire and smoke. And I played My Country 'Tis, the old English drinking song, you know, behind
yeah.
it. And on the other one, I just played some blues licks behind a thing called Signs of the Times, which were people carrying protest signs and throwing rocks at schools. And one of the news magazines picked up those things and really attacked them as negative commercials. It wasn't a music critic, at least, but it was the political critic. They were just
ever looking for the silver lining, Bill. I got a question here for you from Isaac, who really enjoys your calls. He said, what is the most interesting and controversial thing you ever witnessed or was involved in while you were on tour?
I never was really heavy on tour, Bob. We would go to Detroit. I opened in Toledo, in Bowling Green for a Rotary Connection. Those kind of jobs. We didn't go on the Lorne tour. But in Cleveland, one of the nastiest things I ever saw was when the Fugs were playing at a place called the Cavity Cafe, which has been a folk joint. It was changing to electric in about 67. I watched the police subversive squad go after, what's his name? I've seen Howell, Ginsburg. Ginsburg was traveling with the Fugs. And we had a subversive squad here in Cleveland, but Cleveland was loaded with East European ethnics. And when they came here in the teens and 20s, a lot of them brought that nasty word socialist with them.
Right. Some of those inclinations sort of found their way into a lot of the thinking in places like Indiana, Illinois, Wisconsin, Minnesota.
A lot of labor places.
Yeah.
I sent you something yesterday. You were talking about these deputies, and I sent you a line from Tom Joad. You know, the deputy thug hit Casey with a club. That's from the song Tom Joad. You know, Woody's 100th anniversary of his birth was last Saturday.
That's right, yeah.
And I was so deep into that guy. There was a television show in 1960 called Folk Song USA. It was June 60, and I saw an ad for it in the paper, and I was working nights, but I set the mono tape recorder up. You know how you attached it to the speaker wires on your TV?
Yeah.
Yeah, and my mother, because my dad got me started. He was into wire when I first began to become aware of the fact that you could record human voices, you know. And and there was a pretty young, dark-haired girl in the picture, a 17-year-old woman named Joan Baez. That caught my attention. And Cisco Houston was the voiceover for the show. I believe John Jacob Niles and possibly, I don't know if Seeger was on it or not. Probably not, because they had blackballed that guy so bad. But it was great. And that was on the tail end of the Kingston Trio with the popularization of alleged folk music.
Yeah, Alan, don't forget the new Christy Minstrels with Kenny Rogers.
Oh, yeah. Walk right in. Yes, that's the one. Yeah, that stuff. And the University of Chicago, along with having their great financial minds, they had a big folk music group that grew out of that. And then that grew into the first of the Caucasian blues people, Nick Gravenites, Paul Butterfield, that whole Mike Bloomfield, that whole bunch. And eventually filtered down to a guy in Cleveland, you know? Because that was a funny time to be around all this stuff that was going on. I mean, this LaCave manager, every Sunday in the mid-60s, there'd be big groups of kids gathering at the Art Museum Lagoon in Cleveland. I know you were here with your dad. Did you get a chance to do anything like go to the Art Museum or anything?
No, sadly, no.
Good son, yeah, you were there with your dad, and that's...
Mostly I saw the walk between Cleveland Clinic and the so-called guest house across the street.
Yeah. Well, the kids used to gather for what they called be-ins, very, very San Francisco.
I know what those were, yeah.
Yeah. And this guy comes up to me, he's got a guy carrying a guitar with him, and this guy opens a case, and we just started doing acoustic stuff, and I asked him what his name was. It was Arlo Guthrie. And I almost fell over because I started just prattling about his father. I don't know if he wanted to hear that or not, but because Woody was, you know.
Yeah.
His stuff epitomizes that whole music part of the Depression that still makes a push on me when I hear it. Because I read so much about it, that and the big floods. And I guess kids don't read anymore. Maybe they don't have to.
Well, I want to be careful about not saying anything that'll make me sound like I'm yelling for anybody to get off the lawn or anything, Bill. But I even recognize a difference in so far as what the technology was when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And again, one does this at one's peril. But it was harder at one sense it was more difficult, and on the other it was simpler to become immersed in something. Now with, oh dear, I am going to be yelling, get off my yard, get off my lawn. Now with the just constant flood of information that's coming, and I recognize the reality of what I'm saying based on the fact that I, as a parent, you know, I'm watching teenagers deal with it. I mean, it's like even if a kid is well grounded, the world around him has attention deficit, or her has attention deficit disorder, Bill.
Yeah.
So that immersion is not as likely to happen. And frankly, while there's some really great music being produced out there, you've got to go looking for it, because it is garandam double teed that you are not going to hear it when you turn on the for-profit radio.
Well, yeah, at for-profit radio, when I got into radio, 1955, I mean, Bill Randall was playing.
Yeah, that's a different animal than what I say when I say for-profit radio, because. You know, I've remarked in the past about how I wound up doing this because at some point in the dark and dim and distant past, somebody told me that instead of going to work at a hamburger joint, that maybe I should try getting on the radio, that I read words real goodly like and didn't sound halfway unappealing, and that maybe I could go to one of these small stations, and they were all over the place, and spin records and learn about the genre. And lo and behold, I did, and I knew more then and know more now than I ever wanted to know about Southern Quartet obnoxious gospel.
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean, there was some brilliant musicianship in it, but to listen to, mighty tough. There's only so many playthroughs of Dropkick Me Jesus Through the Goalposts of Life that you can really stand. And Jesus, This Is Jimmy. And, you know, I've still got Jesus, This Is Jimmy on the machine here. And when people really piss me off, I play it, Bill. But the thing is, those opportunities don't exist anymore, because for-profit radio now, and I had a little dose of it back when I came back into terrestrial radio, and I would sit behind the microphone and I would read, not read, but I would improv little breaks and basically create little sound files that would be fired in between songs. And that was jocking. That's not jocking to me. Jocking is sitting there with stacks of records and queuing them up and getting your dustbuster out and making sure that they're not scratchy and hissy and poppy and making sure that the music goes about the best that it can and trying to come up with something halfway witty to say in between songs or halfway engaging so that it's not just the same as somebody sitting at home playing the record for themselves. In other words, to create a real artistic medium. And that is gone, because to the extent that any of that happens now, Bill, it happens at the home office in somewhere, and it's beamed, you know, it's beamed out to Whack Bottom Flats, and there's nothing local about it, and there's no pimply-faced 15-year-old teenager that's going to have a job jocking. I mean, that's, you know, even for $3.35 an hour, which was what minimum wage was when I started.
You worked for a legend.
Yeah, I did. I've worked for a couple of them, you know. For a time there, I got Ted Turner's autograph every 2 weeks, and for a time, I got Sam Phillips's autograph for every 2 weeks.
Sam Studio, everything from, you know, one of the supposedly the world's oldest rock and roll song, Rocket 88, which who was talent scouting for him? Ike Turner was going out and providing things, and then a great country performance he had, and a great rockabilly performance he had. Oh, my God. Because that stuff. That rockabilly was big with me. I mean, God.
Oh, yeah, it was huge. It was, not just with you, but the problem is, because everything is centralized, and you know, the right wing. It's so funny, they hate anything centralized unless it's stuff that they're making a buck off of.
Yeah.
Listening to the radio in. Muscle Shoals, Alabama is no different from listening to the radio in Springfield, Missouri.
Well, somebody sent me a station out of Alabama. That's quite interesting.
Oh, that was probably me.
Yeah,
WBFZ FM?
Yeah.
Out of Selma? Oh, I sit and listen to those guys. And the talk programming that they do from, like, what would be, I guess, 1 to 4 here. is brilliant and fearless. And, you know, it gets things like bricks through windows, and it drives the drives the racist right-wing powers that be crazy that it's sitting there emanating over the public airwaves on 50,000 watts, Bill.
Oh, man.
Over that flat ground?
Oh, yeah, they travel it.
You can hear it a long way.
Yeah, that's 50,000 watts. One of my champions who came in late at night when there was one black station here that went off the air at sundown, so about 9 o'clock at night, I could get LAC from, what was it, was that Memphis or Nashville?
LAC is Nashville.
Okay, that was Ernie's Record Parade and Randy's Record Parade, and they're playing, you could buy five rhythm and blues or blues singles for $4 for $5.
Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, LAC now is prone to running right-wing FM hate.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. By the way, you got some fan mail in, Bill.
Good.
The subject.
How much do I own?
Huh?
How much do I own? That's easy to mail again.
It's just write the number in the box and send it in. Whatever.
Yeah,
you
that's it. Yeah.
Under the subject line, Mr. Stress, did his machine kill fascists?
Yeah. Well.
Andy writes in. He says. Woody Guthrie had written on his guitar, "This machine kills fascists."
Yes, sir.
And he said, "Did Bill Cleveland's Mr. Stress have anything written on his instrument?"
Yes, yeah, it's a Hohner.
Yeah, it's hard to write on. I was going to say it's kind of hard to write on a harp.
And I switched over to. I use the guy that used to play with War, Danish kid, Lee Oscar, mainly because the stuff lasts forever. Bob Harmonica is listed. List price on a harp when I started playing was $2.50. It's up to over $25 now, list. You can buy them, you know, you buy them cheaper.
Yeah.
You get 40. That's like when I was doing TV repair, you know, I was getting parts 40% off, just like car mechanics and everybody else, you know.
Yeah, I've heard those stories about, I've never known if there was any truth in it, Bill, about how harp players would... I've heard soak them in beer, soak them in whiskey, soak them in water.
I soak my own liver in gin quite a bit, but I quit.
He'll be here all night. Yeah.
I got the hell out of me by that guy in that Tower of London garbage costume. That boy, on Sunday morning, I wake up and say, where is that man? But my second wife was AA, so out of deference to her and out of the fact that in 86 she ran a big agency in Lake County, and she came home and said, my office is full of people who don't belong here. Because they take something that's really righteous and moral, which is, let's clear the drunks off the road before they wipe too many families out, and why they shouldn't get 10 tickets and they're still driving. And they started turning this into a cash flow situation, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's like that story out of Alabama last night.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Andy adds, he says, my grandparents were some of those socialists from Eastern Europe he's talking about, migrating to the coal fields of Eastern Pennsylvania.
Yep. That was hard work, and it's what they knew in the old country. And, Ohio produced Governor Lausche, who was from the Cleveland ethnic community, George Voinovich, and the same, and Dennis. I mean, I believe that's a good Serbian name by the sound of it. Well, I don't know if he's going to, if I ever see him, he's going to punch me because he was Croatian. I don't know.
Well, you know what? You can get punched over that stuff.
Yeah. Well, the Balkan people can be like, if you go back to World War II and the battling between the various political segments, anybody from what's his name, Tito to the Ustashi to the, I forget what the Croats called the outfit they belonged. But there was a lot of... That was an artificially created country, if you want to know the truth.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You go back far enough there. Because I live in a building, and these people are a lot older than me, some of them maybe 20 years even. And I look at them, and I can't say much because I think about where they were and when the year I was born, in the middle of World War II, and what they were suffering through. You know, being in the middle of a huge gunfight in your backyard between tanks and artillery and surviving it makes a...
Yeah, that ordinance I was talking about earlier with Juanita.
Yes.
Exactly.
It makes a person out of you that I'm not. I don't know if I ever could be. I mean, I grew up in the inner city, and it was, I was kidding about, you know, when you said, how do you, I mean, we'd play games with guys that lived maybe 7-8 blocks south of us, and they were a lot of them from West Virginia and Kentucky, and, you know, we were 13 years old, Bob, you're going to have kids out. What do you mean you said that ball was fair? It was foul. And, yeah, well, that's a foul when you're playing basketball. I mean, you know how kids are. And some guys were more belligerent than others, and they had to dust each other off, and I'll stand by and watch. I don't care, you know. That's between them. But I'll say this, that one of the guys who, a master at catching bass, this guy taught me a ton, and he was from the neighboring state of Kentucky. So, James, he was a hell of a, he's still around, I hope. But well, he taught me how to use safety bait spinner, safety, you know, type spinners, safety pin types. And
oh, yeah.
Oh, he taught me an awful lot. And I came home from work one night at 3 in the morning. He's got a bucket with a 6-pound largemouth in it. And north of the Ohio River, that's one hell of a bass. You don't see too many of them.
Yet.
I mean, you'll see walleye and perch until you're sick of them, but not largemouth. Speaking of largemouth, I'm going to get off and give somebody else a chance here to.
Well, Bill, it's been a great conversation. I appreciate it. I really do. And I know folks love hearing from you.
Well, I like to get these book titles out here because this stuff that we're going through today just didn't originate in 1980. I mean, that guy got elected by a machine that we thought we had finished in 1964. Wrong on us, buddy.
Yeah, and the assault, you know, the assault goes on and on. I mentioned last night talking to Jim that I was rereading Barbara Tuchman's A Distant Mirror.
Yes, yes.
And I found a quote in there, or I found a passage in there talking about the tax that was imposed upon the people of France to pay for what wound up being the Battle of Poitiers. And the way it broke out is the Estates General told the king that they would levy a tax. But the problem was that the clergy and the liege lords were largely exempted from tax, you know, because they were better than, they were above all that.
Yeah.
So the Estates General got together and said, okay, we're going to levy a tax. Everybody's going to pay it. And we're not just going to give you the money, King Jean Le Bon. We'll administer the funds, thank you very much. And so what they did is they levied a tax, and the tax rates were as follows. It was 2% on the clergy. It was 5% on the lords. It was 10% on the 99%.
Yeah. Things never change, do they?
I saw it, and I just thought, son of a gun, there's no let-up. They have been at this from time immemorial.
Well, I want to redo take these tea parties, and let's reenact the tea party. Here, buddy, tie the rope around one end of this big case of tea, and tie the other one around your waist, and let me push this in the box.
Yeah, now, listen, Wile E. Coyote. What you're going to do is you're going to take the box of tea, and you're going to throw it in the river.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bye now.
I do it.
Exactly.
Anyway, have a good one, my friend.
All right, thank you, Bill. You take care, and have a good night.
You too.
Bye now. That's Bill, Mr. Stress from Cleveland, and everybody enjoys his calls. I'm sitting here having an interesting back-channel conversation with John Fox. Look for something fun and unique and something that you can only obtain here, coming in very short order. That's just a little teaser, okay? But I know based on the reaction that we got, it'll be something that you will be very much interested in, and hopefully it'll encourage some further contribution just to get us the hell out of July. I mean, Jesus, it's the 19th of July, and that means we're what, 12 days away from done with it. Come on. But yeah, I'll let you know what's shaking out. I got to mention something to you because it came along from Isaac. And it's one of those moments. No, it's not Wednesday or anything, but I still get to make periodic reference to occasionally dragging out the old moth-eaten prophet's robes with the frayed embroidered moons and stars upon them. And this is one of those. You remember when we were first talking about what happened to places like West Virginia after the derecho blew through? And I said, you marked my words. Actually, I was kind of half wrong. That's why my robe's a little tattered and the moons and stars are kind of peeling and stuff and the appliques and embroideries are coming loose and so forth, a little moth-eaten. I said, just wait, let it calm down a little bit, let the weather go by, let the heat of summer pass, and Appalachian power will be on us like a duck on a June bug, making us pay for the fact that they string their electric wires on toothpicks. Guess what? I was wrong. AEP, which also provides power to folks in Ohio, hasn't missed a lick. And no, they didn't wait till the heat of summer was past. And no, they did not wait until memories of all the food that went bad thawing out and getting warm and going rotten in refrigerators and freezers had passed from our minds and the costs associated with it. They didn't wait. Can't wait. Because they are driven not by public service, which is what utilities are supposed to be, but by private avarice. So, Bohica, look out. Lie back and think of England. The story that Isaac sent comes from a blog called Plunderbund. Plunderbund, plunderbund.com. Headline, AEP wants to charge customers for storm damage. It's an Ohio story. AEP wants to charge customers for storm damage, and Kasich, you know, the governor, the former Fox News Radio Rwanda commentator, Kasich cut funding to the agency that could fight it. If you were one of those people who lost power, at any point in the process, did you say to yourself, must be my fault? When those 80-mile-an-hour winds were roaring through and plucking phone poles out of the air and dropping trees on them like something out of the Wizard of Oz, at any point in time did you, because I didn't, ask yourself, what did I do to make this happen? Well, you may not have, and that just goes to show what a damn rube you are. Because AEP knows better. They know it's your fault. That's why they want you to pick up the tab. Or us. Or we. The story says, if you're one of the 595,000 AEP customers in Ohio alone, that's not the 500,000 in West Virginia. This is an Ohio story, like I said. If you're one of the 595,000 AEP customers in Ohio who recently suffered through extreme heat without the convenience of refrigeration or air conditioning, I'm going to guess this headline might piss you off, says Budget Watcher writing at Plunderbund. From 10TV.com, AEP Ohio wants to pass costs of outage repairs to customers. An AEP Ohio spokeswoman said that the company planned to ask the Ohio Public Utilities Commission, often in some other states called a public service commission, to pass costs on to customers. AEP Ohio estimates it spent millions to restore power to hundreds of thousands of Ohioans after storms hit June 29th and July 1st. We pass on what the commission allows us to pass on, said AEP Ohio spokeswoman Terry Flora. It's not a guarantee, and it's not automatic. I don't have it in front of me, but give me a good look. at the Ohio Public Utilities Commission membership, and we'll talk about how automatic and guaranteed it is. Here's how it works in the land of freedom and independence. That's what Willard called us yesterday, isn't it? Ohio law grants customers no right to a credit for electrical outages, but Ohio's electric utilities do have a right under Ohio law to pass along the costs associated with storm damage to customers to ensure their profit margin is protected. Son of a... To ensure, you know, not to ensure the integrity of the power grid, but to ensure that their profit margin is protected. And while the folks who lost power should be the most pissed off, says Budget Watcher, if approved by the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio, all AEP customers, whether they lost power or not, will be on the hook for the additional charges. Ohio also has an Ohio Consumers Council, which is there to speak up when power companies try to plunder their ratepayers' wallets. And this writer notes, in his two-year budget, Governor Kasich slashed the budget for the Office of Ohio Consumers Council. Its budget was cut in half. We've got to cut costs here. We're going broke. What do y'all need a consumer council for? What do you need that for, huh? We know what's good for you. What's good for AEP is good for you. In slashing the budget, Kasich said that the OCC's function was redundant. What did I just tell you? It was redundant with the Public Utilities Commission, whose actual, if not stated, function in life is to rubber stamp whatever a public utility wants. Writing in the Cleveland Plain Dealer, their editorial board said Kasich's claim reflects a fundamental lack of knowledge about utility regulation in Ohio that Kasich's team had better correct forthwith. Oddly enough, it didn't even have any effect on the budget, because the Office of Consumers Counsel is actually funded through assessments on the utilities themselves and not from taxpayer funds. Well, now we understand why Kasich cut the budget in half, don't we? So the Governor Kasich in this case, appoints members to the Public Utilities Commission, and the chairman sits as a member of the gubernatorial cabinet. So guess what, Ohio ratepayers? Yeah. And you're not going to be kissed either. And just as the storm hit Ohio before it hit West Virginia, so too will this rapacious nonsense.
We've got to protect our profit margins.
Tell you what, take your profit margin out of your CEO's salary for a couple of years. Why don't you do that? Why don't your CEO live on some sort of, you know, pissant $150,000 a year instead of millions? Yeah, I know, Ron. What did I expect? Folks in Georgia are paying for nuclear plants that may never go online. Nice racket. Oh, yes, it is. It absolutely is. And, well, I might as well keep the tattered robe on. Marty just dropped a note. Maybe you're right about Zimmerman doing the interview with Radio Rwanda, setting up an insanity defense. Hopefully, he's in trouble now. ABC News reporting George Zimmerman prosecution may use TV interview as evidence. It certainly got every right to. The prosecution team wasted no time in entering the tape of the interview into discovery and disclosing it to the defense team as evidence they hoped to use in the trial. But again, I offer a word of caution, because the whole jury pool is tainted. The jury pool may be harder to pull in Florida than was the jury for the O.J. trial. And there are a lot more people in Florida who are, well, I'd shoot him too. It is interesting that toward the end of the interview, after the break, nice shooting Zim. You know, remember, that's what Republican voters call nicknamed him. Tried to, ameliorate or maybe just further crazify himself. He looked at the camera and said, I do wish there was something, anything I could have done that would have put me in a position that I wouldn't have to take his life. I don't know if this was legal malpractice or if it is part of an actual scheme to set up the defense. Sandra just dropped in a note and said, by the way, same thing's going to happen in Maryland as is happening in Ohio. Maryland Pepco BGE customers will see bill for 24 hours of lost storm income in form of bill stabilization adjustment. My, that's Orwellian. WUSA DC saying, some of you will see an extra charge in your next electric bill because Pepco and BGE lost money when they couldn't charge customers to deliver power during the storm outage. I mean, now, I'm not saying that everybody's got the wherewithal to do it. We don't. But, Jesus, does this not make you want to take 5 minutes of your life and consider the possibility of moving to wind and solar? That dream of Brother Albert's of solar panels on every roof? And if it doesn't, why not? Are we such pathetic little Borg drones that we just sit around and let our... Well, you know, it was God's plan for us to lose $2,000 worth of food. It's God's plan. That's the same shit George Zimmerman says. And hey, it's extra fun because they don't even have to ask for it in Maryland. The storm adjustment kicks in automatic, Maryland Public Service Commission spokeswoman Regina Davis. The BSA, bill stabilization adjustment, is calculated and applied by the companies, but checked by PSC and staff, and we make the utilities correct it if they get it wrong. What's wrong is about assessing it at all, sister! But you know what? Ratepayers are over a barrel. The power company knows it. And it is not a damned accident that Brother Albert's panels aren't on every roof. This is not a boating accident. So, yeah, that's one good last jab of the thorn for Thorn in the Side Thursday. Join us tomorrow for Friday on the Front Porch. This is one of those shows where the time has flown by, and I thank you for your time, your emails, your thoughts, your participation in the chat room, your kind contribution to get us out of July. Thank you. We need all the help we can get. This has been an ugly, ugly month, and it's 12 days from over. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. So is the snail mail address. Thank you to those of you who have generously helped already. 76 folks, $10 apiece, boom, done with July. Sure would be nice. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thank you to John Fox. Glad you survived the wonderful, wonderful world of Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
And we'll have a little surprise, John and I, tomorrow evening. Look for it. Makes sense to do this on the front porch. And thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. It's amazing what Ben has done over the years. Simply amazing. Thanks always go out, as noted at the beginning of the program, thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and more importantly, at this point, acact.org. Thank you. Go to acact.org. And be part of the solution to Appalachia's agony. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Rick Smith is next on the Horn.